Welcome to Nocturnal Journal. Thanks, Ro. That's a little tribute to the late Dr. John, who passed away this week at age 77 in New Orleans. I read he was living on Lake Pontchartrain. So thanks, Ro. That should be the name of our show, Right Place, Wrong Time. So we got a nice show tonight. In the 10 o'clock hour, we have live rock and roll from Ethel Schenck live in our studio. They've got a full band tonight, so that'll be worth checking out. 9:30 to 10, we're going to talk to Larry Marion, director of the Bob Bunus Archive, and we're going to get a deep dig into the Rolling Stones at Chess, an exhibit that opened up this week at the Blues Heaven Foundation at 2120 South Michigan, the old Chess Studios. And leading off the show is our dear friend Emmett Broderick of the King County Cougars. We were just talking. We've known each other for at least 20 years. Yeah. Disclaimer, I do a little baseball column for you. Yes, I've done. It's just a labor of love. Yes, I just love doing it. It's a sense of loyalty. Yeah. And I want to set some light on the Cougars. I want to set this up. I want you to talk about what the Cougars are about. But I remember when I covered the press conference when the Cougars were announced, and people talked about, right now I think the Chicago area is a mecca for minor league baseball, but back when the Cougars started, there was nothing around, and people said, hey, this isn't going to work,
yeah.
Minor league baseball. So talk about a little bit of the history of the Cougars.
Oh, my gosh. They come from Wausau, Wisconsin. We started here in 91, and I started with the team in 99.
And what was your role when you started?
Graphic design.
Okay.
and marketing.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was just when we started getting into the internet and things like that. There was no, you know, podcasts or anything like that. But, you know, we've had some, you know, a lot of good players come through this organization. So,
well, yeah, let's talk about the affiliates. So yeah. We were just doing this in the green room, but I know Baltimore was the first one.
Yeah.
Then was Florida next?
Florida, yep, and then Oakland, and then Kansas City, and then it was the Cubs.
The Cubs.
Now it's Arizona.
Now it's Arizona.
Correct.
And I do want to throw out some names of the people that came through, but to tell the listeners who may not be familiar how an affiliate works.
Oh, well, we go into a contract, a player development contract with a Major League Baseball team. We're the only affiliated baseball within the Chicago area.
Yeah.
I kind of look at it as like baseball college. You know, we're at the single A level, but you can go to obviously double A and triple A, and then, you know, on your way to the majors. So, but the contract, they can sign a minimum 2-year contract. Some teams will sign 4 and 6, depending on how the business is. And that's what it is, really. It's the business of baseball. And you have to gel really well with the team. You know, you have to, with the front office and with the grounds crew and everybody involved with putting this product on the field, you really have to be, you know, in sync with them and cooperate. Give and take, all that stuff. It's a really big business.
You know, when people, you're in the Midwest League, and people, yes, think about teams in Cedar Rapids and Burlington, Iowa, and, well, West Michigan's kind of a suburb of Grand Rapids. But what does it mean to be so close to Chicago? Do affiliates look at that?
The Cubs did.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was, you know, South Bend is close. If not closer, but, you know, again, it's how the teams like one another. It was nice that they thought that we were within 35 miles of here, and if they wanted to come down and take a look at players, we were a good spot for rehab starts.
Mm-hmm.
For the major league team. We had a couple. It seems that like a lot of teams are starting to put their affiliates within a distance that they can get to very easily these days. It seems that's what's going on.
Off the top of my head, these are some of the players people would know that have come through King County. Josh Beckett.
Yeah.
Javi Baez.
Yeah.
Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about Rick Renteria. As long as we're a White Sox, I mean, yeah, Rick was there.
Rick
with
was
the Marlins, right?
Yes, yes.
So, talk about Rick.
He was great. Yeah, I was telling you, he was the first Major League Baseball player I ever played catch with.
Yeah,
he was that nice that after the season was over, he, you know, before he left, came down to the field and, you know, played catch with a guy I used to work with. And myself, and that was really nice. He knew how to handle this team really well.
It must be, how long have you been over there then?
20 years.
20 years even. What's it like to see these young players, and some get bonuses and some, but they're at a certain stage of humility.
There is
low
a have,
yeah.
have and haves not.
Yeah.
with that. I remember Miguel Cabrera coming through, couldn't speak a word of English, and skinniest kid in the world, but he had the right attitude. He just wanted to play baseball. He was happy every time he went on the field, just kind of like Adrian Gonzalez was the same way.
Yeah.
Real, real humble kid, and just you just knew this kid was going to be a Major League Baseball player. So,
what changes have you seen? I was telling you I went over to Clinton and I was talking to them, and you know they've got a very small facility. I think the stadium was built in 1937, but they were talking about even like 5 years ago. You mentioned the reason I asked this question. You were talking about Cabrera and being skinny. They talk about like dietary and dietitians and stuff. That's like a big deal now, and they have to have a big kitchen and stuff like that. What are the changes you've seen in 20 years?
Well, like I mentioned, having it would be considered a psychiatric coach.
Yeah.
To see how the players are handling, you know, when players come up from the Latin players come up, it's pretty brave to be able to come up and not know the language or the cultures around here, and they want to make sure that they're handling it okay. Just being able to handle day-to-day things.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
doing laundry and just living. So
do all the players talk about the sponsorship program with families in the area? Unless they're like getting big bonuses, I suppose they live on their own. But do players live with families they and do they help out and stuff like that?
Yeah, they do. If we have that event every year before the season starts. It's almost kind of like you would liken it to a 5-minute dating game. You know, we'll have all the people who are part of the housing program come in and meet the players and just kind of see how they gel.
So. Okay. We're going to take a break, and then I want to come back and talk about maybe this was destiny for you with your family history in baseball. So don't go away with Emmett Broderick of the King County Cougars on Nocturnal Journal.
The umpire, the umpire, the guy who calls every play. We ain't got no use for the umpire unless he calls them our way.
Hey,
he calls one a strike that just misses my hat, and that's how I know that he's blind as a bat.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Well, you'll only hear The Umpire by Mitch Miller. Did you know that song, Emmett?
I did not.
That's Mitch Miller with a guest appearance by the late, well, they're both with Roy Campanella. And we're playing that because talk about your grandfather, Red. And I think this is all, that's another reason I wanted to have you on the show. This has to be in your blood, baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you, you and I have talked about him, but talk about him, stuff I don't know.
Well, let's see. He was an American League umpire back in the, between 1923 and 1941. Made his way up through the minor leagues as far as umpires are concerned. His first real test in World Series, he was in the 1927 World Series. With Murderers Row and Babe Ruth, and he knew, you know, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb. My uncle Ban, God rest his soul, he was named after Ban Johnson, who was the American League president at the time.
And was your grandfather from Wisconsin?
No.
He broke in there then.
He did.
Yeah,
he did. He was a pitcher in the early 1900s. Played in Green Bay. Played in the 3I League for a while, and then went off to World War One. He was a grenadier in World War One. So, but then he came back. He was wounded in war, and his pitching days were over. So, he decided to become an umpire. So,
World Series ump in 27. I've got here 27, 33, 37, and 41.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's Red Ormsby, but was his birth name Emmett?
First name was Emmett.
Is that
how I was named after?
That's how you were named.
You bet.
So was this going to happen? I mean, when you were a little kid, were you interested in baseball? I mean,
You know what? Unfortunately, Grandpa passed away a month after I was born. At least he met me, but I don't remember meeting him, obviously. So, we grew up playing baseball. Grandpa's name was in the background everywhere we went. My mother was so proud of him. My mother's so funny. She wanted to play baseball, but Grandpa said, girls don't play baseball. And you could tell that was the time back then.
He must have been something. You sent me this article. I don't know when this Red Ornsby tells anecdotes of his major league career. I don't think you could write like this. I don't know how old this article is.
But the
1930s, because it says balding, but still with a tinge of red to his remaining hair. Ornsby proved a masterful speaker in the best manner of the late Newt Rockne. So he was a gregarious guy.
After he retired from umpiring, he was a scout for the White Sox for some years. And then after that, he went on the Speakers Bureau and did speaking engagements all over the place. So all over the country, actually. So as far away as Alaska, which is pretty funny. But he would tell stories about Ty Cobb and his days with Babe Ruth and such. So, yeah.
So baseball's in your blood. I want to paint a picture for the readers. And I go to King County Cougars game, and I watch you. Just tell me what an average day is like. You're more than a graphic designer.
I mean,
did you do the logos? You've done the logos for the Cougars?
A lot of the things that around the ballpark are done through myself, uniforms, programs. Obviously, the articles that you submit and everything. So, you get there in the morning, and if we have a game, we're there for the game at night. And so summers are...
Yeah, so when you get there, what do you do? When you get there, you say in the morning, how early do you get there? Like, say it's a night game.
About 9:30, 10 o'clock.
In the morning?
Yes.
For a night game?
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then... I do my day job. We promote the ball club and the upcoming events and such. And then when the stadium starts coming alive around 4 or 5 o'clock, game day staff comes in, ushers, all the parking attendants and such. So after that, I help out with on-field events as much as I can, and get up and down the stairs and anything else that needs to be handled. We had a military appreciation night the other night on June 6th, and I had 8 World War II veterans out on the field, which, they're all 90s, so we had to drive them around from center field and get them out on the field, and it was just amazing. But, yeah, those are things that just are part of the day.
Now that I'm thinking about it, you've had some notables. I like a little trivia like this. This isn't on my list of questions. Who was the shortstop where the rock star was related?
Rex Rundgren.
Rex Rundgren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his father was Todd Rundgren.
Did he come to the game?
Oh, all the time.
Todd Rundgren came to a lot of games.
It's funny. Todd got to the point where he did his walk-up music.
Oh, really?
He went into a studio somewhere and did a
little... Oh, Rex did, or Todd?
Todd did.
Oh, really?
He recorded...
Well, he played walk-up music for Rex.
Exactly, yeah. And he was there almost every game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Was Gretzky there?
He was.
I want to say I saw Wayne Gretzky there.
One year he was. He didn't last very long.
But did his father come?
Yeah.
I remember that. I was at that game, I think.
I'll tell you.
Wayne Gretzky.
The one time that I thought to myself, I don't want to be one of those kind of people that just, go up and ask for an autograph. But Wayne Gretzky was one of the guys that got me to play hockey, because I grew up playing hockey, too. And I missed out because he never came back.
Yeah.
So I missed out on at least just saying hi to him, So, oh, well.
I've got a story. I don't like to talk about myself on the show, but since you're here, a couple summers ago, I went to Montreal.
Yeah.
And I rented a car and went to see the Can-Am League.
Oh, yeah.
And Gretzky's son was playing there.
Yes.
Can-Am League. That's really they played in an old stadium and stuff. And Wayne Gretzky was there for that game.
Yeah.
And I forgot Gretzky's son's name, but he had a home run in that game. So,
I can't remember his name either.
Yeah. So talk about some of the events you've got coming up, and I really want to. I'm going to be there Thursday night as Anchorman night.
Right.
So talk about Anchorman night.
Well, we've got we're giving away a bobblehead that night, burgundy bobblehead that night. So that'll be an interesting crowd that will come through there.
Are you going to have any Anchorman throw out the first pitch or anything?
No,
Bill Curtis must be busy.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can get you out there. Yeah. We know you can make it to the plate.
Yeah, right. I've done it. Yeah.
You've done that once before. Yeah. So
that's Anchorman night.
Yep. We have Ninja Turtles night. As a matter of fact, this weekend is going to be pretty pretty busy. Ninja Turtles night on Friday, and then Carnival night on Saturday. With our first concert is going to be American English.
Okay.
So, yeah, that'll be fun.
And it's in Geneva. Give us a website and how people can find out more.
kccougars.com. The phone number is 630-232-8811. I almost gave you my cell phone number, which was funny. But yeah, we're home starting Tuesday and going through the end of the week.
It's just beautiful. Over the years, I've sent people out. I mean, both Geneva and St. Charles are great towns to hang out in.
Yeah.
And
I've
sent my friends from the city. If you can pick a weekend on the first weekend of the year, then you can parlay a King County Cougar game with the King County Flea Market.
Yeah.
And it's really a great escape from the Chicago area. You mentioned the armed forces. I want to talk about in a little bit of the time we have left.
Okay.
You're so busy with the ballpark, but then you find all this time to volunteer. And I don't know if that also comes from your grandfather, but the Lone Survivor Foundation, Navy SEALs Fund. Talk about your commitment to the armed forces.
Well, we've... At the ballpark, we have the hometown hero, where we honor someone most games that we can get somebody to come out and I've met some historic people, and that made an impact on me. So I started kind of doing some research and trying to figure out a way that I can give back in a way that I know that I can do it the best I know how. So that being graphic design and art. So I would contact some of these places and say, look, I'm offering you my services as a graphic designer. And I'm not asking for money. I just want to give back. And I've been with the Navy SEALs Fund and the Lone Survivor Foundation, the Chris Kyle Frog Foundation. Mm. And I've got two other ones that I'm working with as well. Just offering... You know, marketing designs, when they have events, special events, brochures, and things that help them make aware to people, to veterans and first responders, that they're there for them to help. So I'll put together all kinds of things for them. So
that's so great for you.
It's been great.
I told you it was going to run fast. We'll have to bring you back and talk about Disney. We'll do a Disney round.
Yeah.
One more thing and then we'll let you run.
Sure.
Talk about the All-Star game. You're affiliated with the Diamondbacks this year.
Yep.
So who are the two of the All-Stars? I don't know the Don Money connection.
You're right. Buddy Kennedy is the grandson of Don Money. And then we've got a kid named Alec Thomas who went to school at Mount Carmel.
Yeah, I've seen him play.
So yeah, they're two of our Midwest League All-Stars this year.
Well, thanks so much for coming down on a busy, busy Saturday night. And I'll be there Thursday for Anchorman night.
Yes.
I'll be there nice and early.
Thanks, my friend.
Okay. Thanks, Emmett Broderick of the Kane County Cougars. One more time, the website?
kccougars.com.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And we're going to be back and talk about the Rolling Stones after this on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and we're in the studio. I'm really excited about this. Larry Marion, director and curator of the Bob Bonus Archive. We touched on this, I think it was last week, right, Ro, when we had the chess people in. But I went and saw this exhibit that opened the 5th, right?
Yep.
It's called The Rolling Stones at Chess. It's at the Blues Heaven Foundation / Chess Studios, 2120 South Michigan. We heard a little 2120, the Stones doing that there. And it's 55... photos from chess from the first session that the Stones did there, and then 5 from the Palmer House. So, Larry, pick up the story. How'd you get these photos?
Okay, my background is in rock and roll and entertainment memorabilia, and I was running an auction house in New York City and dealing with acquisitions, and a gentleman called and said, I have some memorabilia I'd like you to appraise and maybe sell for me. I saw you set all kinds of world record prices for Beatles memorabilia. And I said, sure, tell me about it. And he said, well, my dad was both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones U.S. tour manager from 1964 through 1966.
And this was Bob's son?
This was Bob's son, Alex.
Bob passed away in 92.
Bob passed away in 92, correct.
And okay, so who was Bob?
Bob was, he started his career as a booking agent and then opened his own management agency, Bob Bonus Management. And he started out managing jazz acts because that was really his thing. And in New York in the late 50s, early 60s, all the jazz clubs were pretty much run by mobsters.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob, 6'2", 200 pounds, got a reputation for standing up to anybody. So when the Stones were ready to come to America, the agency that was booking them, General Artists Corporation, a gentleman named Norman Weiss was the agent responsible, and the Rolling Stones had worked really hard to have a terrible reputation, and it preceded them before they came here, and Norman was like, who am I going to get to play tour manager? And he immediately thought of Bob, and convinced Bob to take the job. Bob met them and thought they were delightful and wonderful and easy to work with. And Bob got them pretty much everywhere they needed to go on time, which was unheard of back in England. And they had a reporter from Melody Maker, a British weekly paper, with them on that first tour. And word spread that Bob got them, you know, to the Mike Douglas show at 7 o'clock in the morning without a problem. So when the Beatles were ready to do their first real tour, they asked Stone's management, who should we get as a tour manager? And they gave Bob a hearty recommendation. So he ended up being tour manager for both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
So this was they first visited Chess in June 10th, 1964.
Correct.
They weren't as well known as the Beatles, right?
No,
I talked to the Palmer House a couple of weeks ago, right. And they had no photos. I guess the only photos are the ones you have.
Yeah.
So talk about them being under the radar in 64 coming to the States.
Well, unlike the Beatles, Brian Epstein wouldn't bring the Beatles to America until they had a number one hit.
Uh-huh.
Andrew Oldham, the Rolling Stones manager, was a little bit more reckless and progressive and aggressive about it. And they came to America June 1st, 1964, just 2 weeks after their first album had come out. And to most of America, no one knew who they were. New York, Los Angeles knew who they were, and those shows sold out. You know, two shows at Carnegie Hall, show at Swing Auditorium in San Bernardino sold right out. But almost the entire rest of America had no idea who they were. So they would play in like 1,500 seaters and 200 or 300 people would show up. Their second and third shows in America were at the Teen Fair of Texas San Antonio, where they shared the bill with a couple of good country stars, George Jones, Bobby V's band, which included Bobby Keys.
That's where they met him,
and he went on to play on every album until he
became
passed away.
Became a good friend of Keith Richards.
Exactly. Well, Texas didn't receive them very well. You know, they were called names and harassed as, long hair, dirty, all that stuff from that era. And they were kind of depressed. And Andrew Oldham again said, I can't have my band going on tour, being upset. So what would excite them? Recording at Chess. But Chess at the time only allowed people who were on Chess Records to record there.
Mm-hmm.
So Andrew Oldham reached out to Phil Spector and said, can you help me? And Phil arranged the booking. So they flew from San Antonio up to Chicago.
And the exhibit has, I did walk through it. You've got the original Braniff Airline tickets.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So amongst Bob's paperwork from his files and things that we held on to were the original tickets for their flight from San Antonio up to Chicago. It's interesting when you try to research this stuff, it says they came in through Dallas, but it's not the case. I have the plane tickets are actually there.
The pictures, they just, some just stick out in my mind. Talk about, and this is radio, so people have to go see the exhibit, but the ones of the Palmer House of Jagger, you were telling me he was watching, was it the Red Skelton Hour? There's two shots.
Exactly.
He's watching it. There's one pretending like he's asleep. It just, it's I like the humanity and just the
that's really a remarkable photo.
Yeah, right. Yeah, talk a little about that. And
so they actually recorded at Chess on three separate occasions, June 10th and 11th. Then they came back in November and recorded there again November 8th.
Uh-huh.
But they used Chicago kind of as a hub to play all of the local Ohio, Detroit, all of the cities that they played around here. But they stayed at the Palmer House on that second tour in November. Just before they had come to America, they filmed a segment for the Red Skelton Hour, a variety show like the Ed Sullivan Show. But when it first aired in America, they weren't able to see it because it only aired in America. But it just so turns out that on November 10th, while they were at the Palmer House, the Red Skelton Hour was rebroadcast. And Bob was there in the hotel room when Mick is laying on this couch with an issue of Harper's Magazine sitting next to him, and gets to watch the Rolling Stones perform, which was filmed at the London Palladium, the stairs of the London Palladium.
How much research? We played 2120 there at the beginning, and you made the deduction that since that one picture, we're going to run this picture on the Nocturnal Journal Facebook page, which I don't plug enough, but since Jagger wasn't in that picture, you figured that was the 2120 being an instrumental.
There are several pictures that Bob took from the control room looking out into the studio as they're actually recording. And this one picture in particular shows the entire band performing. They recorded live. That's how they recorded at the time. Uh-huh. And Mick's not singing in this particular one. So I'm deducing that that's when they were recording 2120 South Michigan Avenue, the instrumental that they recorded that day and named after the address.
Is their camp aware of this? I mean, are the Stones aware of this? Are their managements aware of these photos?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Have they seen them?
They haven't seen most of the ones that are on display here.
Uh-huh.
I put out a book called The Lost Rolling Stones Photos, the Bob Bonus Archive, 1964 to 1966, from HarperCollins several years back. And there's 15 or 20 of the photos from the Chess sessions mixed throughout that book in various different sessions. But for this, because June 10th is the 55th anniversary, we prepared all the rest of the photos. So there's 55 photos of them from Chess, and most of them have never been seen by anyone.
Have you shown them anywhere else?
This is the world premiere exhibit of them.
And do you know what are the hours? I don't even have that. The hours that people can go to Chess and see them? Or what? Give me a website.
Bluesheavenfoundation.com.
Yeah.
Is their website. And they're generally open Tuesday through Saturday, I believe from noon to 4 or noon to 5.
Right, that's about right.
And they do hourly guided tours.
That's true.
And part of the tour is you get to see the exhibit.
It really is great. I mean, I took all those notes. I like the itinerary. We were looking at that itinerary. It was a tour itinerary, right, of August 13th.
Yeah, there's actually three different...
Oh, no, that was the Frank Fried, who I knew. He did a little festival, a second annual Summer of Stars, Chicago 66. And it was a list of these different concerts, right?
So I brought along a bunch of memorabilia.
Yeah, you had Bill Cosby and Chad Mitchell, Staple Singers Folk Festival on July 13th.
Yeah.
Folk back then.
Exactly. An appearance by the Beatles and an appearance by the Rolling Stones on that particular handbill.
It's really... Now, you're selling some stuff. Talk about the commemorative posters, which are really, really handsome, and a portion of the proceeds of these sales, and talk about how they're cut and stuff, benefit the foundation's goal of restoring the Chess facility to a working recording studio.
Right. So one of the big purposes of this exhibition is to raise funds for the Blues Heaven for Willie Dixon's Blues Heaven Foundation to restore the facility into a working studio.
Which is so important.
What I did was I took an image of the original Rolling Stones 1964 tour poster and redid it in that style to create the exhibition poster. And it's printed by a letterpress printer in Muncie, Indiana, Tribune show poster.
Oh, right in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Muncie, yeah.
And they're one of two or three letterpress printing houses still surviving in America. And they did a wonderful, wonderful job of printing this. It's a limited run.
Right.
And the posters are for sale at Blues Heaven Foundation and also at a website that we set up, bobbonuschess.com. And bonus is B-O-N-I-S.
I highly recommend those. Very, very nice. Okay, we're going to take a break, and I want to get a little bit into more of your background and talk a little bit more about the sessions. This is great stuff.
Thank you.
So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Because I used to love her.
We should just play that stuff all night, right, Ro? Just kick back. It's great stuff. Larry Marion, director and curator of the Bob Bonus Archive. It's a wonderful, wonderful exhibit. You got to go see it. It opened June 5th, and it's the Rolling Stones at Chess at the Blues Heaven Foundation. 55 photos from them, their first coming to Chicago, at Chess, and 5 from the Palmer House. But tell me about when they recorded that song. That was in the first round, right?
That was in the first round, yeah, on June 10th. They did sessions on both the 10th and the 11th and recorded quite a number of songs. But that song, Murray the K turned them on.
It was a Valentino's version.
Exactly. Yeah. They had visited Murray the K on WINS in New York, and Murray pulled Andrew Oldham aside and said, they should record this. This song's going to be a big hit. And when they came to Chess just about a week and a half later, that was one of the songs that they cut, and it became their first UK number one.
Yeah, yeah.
Great Bobby Womack song.
Great Bobby Womack song. I was telling you during the break, I interviewed Womack a couple times, and he was a very cantankerous guy. And some of the stories I read was that he didn't want the Stones to record it, but Sam Cooke told him
that's what I heard.
Greenlit it and stuff. What was it like for you the first time you came into the studio? And again, you know, I mean, there's myths about when the Stones came in there, Muddy was, and we've had Marshall Chess on the show.
Right.
And, you know, Muddy was painting the ceiling and stuff. But what was it like for you just emotionally to walk in there for the very first time? You said the very first time was a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. So I've been to Chicago before. Yeah.
How did that feel for you? Because it's kind of well preserved there.
It's an incredible experience.
Yeah.
You feel it. You feel the presence of the history as soon as you walk in, and when you go upstairs to the studio, they give a wonderful guided tour.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the tour, they take you up into the studio, and you sit in these chairs while they play pieces of recordings of some of the classics that were recorded there. Unbelievable, and it sends chills up and down your spine.
Yeah, it's
really unbelievable.
In his biography, you know, Keith Richards called Chess Hallowed Ground and the perfect recording studio.
Yeah,
they did that stuff with the echoes, and it was just really, really.
Yeah, the gentleman who designed it, I can't recall his name.
Was it Ron Malo?
He was the engineer.
Yeah.
And it was really, really special for them because the studios in the UK where they had recorded couldn't really capture the sound that they produced when they were on stage, and they went to Chess and they told Ron what they were looking for, and he instantly got it.
Yeah.
And they were just in awe of how spectacular their sound was. All of a sudden, the sound they had been trying to capture on record, Ron was able to capture.
This was, for the listeners who don't know, talk about this. This was a big deal for them. I mean, it's the story about them meeting and carrying around Chess records in London and stuff. Talk about how important for them to visit this hallowed ground.
Chess is the spark that possibly created the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
I don't know that there would be a Rolling Stones without Chess. Mick and Keith were childhood friends, grew up in the same town, went to school together, and kind of started to travel in different circles, even though they still lived close to each other. And then just by chance, I think the date was October 17th, 1961, they ran into each other on the Dartford train platform while both heading to different schools that they now went to. And Keith had a guitar with him, and Keith was a up-and-coming guitar player learning his trade and a huge Chuck Berry fan. And Mick was standing there with two albums under his arm, and Keith said, what's that? And Mick showed him, and he had a Muddy Waters album and a Chuck Berry album. And Keith said, wow, where did you get those? I've never seen those before. And Mick said, I mail-ordered them from Chess Records in Chicago. They weren't available in the UK at the time. And they got on the train together, and they chatted the whole way. And that conversation, that incident, that meeting, that chance meeting, led to them getting together and starting to play. And they formed Little Boy Blue and the Blue Boys.
Yeah.
And then sometime later, when Brian Jones decided he was ready to form a band and put an ad in the Jazz Collector magazine, he got introduced to Mick and Keith, and they decided to move forward and form the Rolling Stones.
Do you have an aha photo? I mean, a photo that you really like or really made an impression on you or didn't know anything about and you just wanted to... give me a couple of your favorite photos. Are they all like your kids?
there's just so many that just blow me away. But that particular one of Mick laying on the couch watching them perform. It's actually a series of two photos.
Yeah, right.
The first one, Mick is watching the TV, and it's a great, you know, 60s era television set that he's watching with the antennas.
Yeah, it is.
And all of the Stones are on the screen in this particular photo, and Mick has just a priceless expression on his face. And then the second photo in the series, Mick is front and center. He's in fact, his face is the only thing on the screen, and Mick lays his head down as if he's like pretending to sleep.
That's great.
It's really a precious
moment. You mentioned when I saw the other day that you think maybe Charlie had a connection with Bob because they were both jazz fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, Charlie always loved jazz. And that was where Bob came from, was from the jazz world. So when they first met, they were the first two to really bond. And Bob took Charlie around and introduced him to a whole mess of Charlie's heroes at the time.
What'd you learn about Brian Jones? I mean, some of the stories I've read about Chess is he was such a blues guy. I mean, he was such a fan. Was he really all in on this?
Oh yeah,
absolutely. I don't know much about his role with Chess.
Absolutely, Brian. Brian was the impetus for this whole thing. Brian was a blues aficionado, loved Elmore James. In fact, he played under the name Elmo Lewis in tribute to him. Brian is considered to be the first blues slide guitar player in the UK, and really, really drove them to be a blues band. And they played in jazz clubs in London at the time, in and around London. And people didn't at first really know what to make of it, but the fans thought it's really catch on.
The time is so right for this. I mean, look at the success the Stones have had with these blues albums.
Well, they put out Blue and Lonesome, which was their first real blues endeavor in a long time.
Yeah. So, and they that did well for them.
And they said that they felt the presence of Brian Jones when they were in the studio recording that.
Yeah, and then this show will still be up when they're in town, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
and the 21st and the 25th.
Right, the show runs to the 29th, and they're playing the 21st and the 25th.
So it's a lot of stuff coming together for you.
Yeah.
What, in a little bit of time we have left, how long have you been doing this overall?
So my background, as I think I said, was in rock and roll and entertainment memorabilia. I was the kid that, when I went to a concert, I would find a moment to sneak away and see if I could pry that poster out of the lobby frame or get a set list or a drumstick or something. And, you know, I really had a love of both music and art. And for me, concert posters is kind of where those two things met. So I became a fanatic, kind of obsessive collector of concert posters.
And we've got about 2 minutes, but real quick, I mean, research. I mean, how do you verify fact, fiction?
It's an archaeological dig, really.
Right.
You know, some of this stuff is just like combing through thousands and thousands of photos to find something in the background that tells me what it is. You know, Bob wasn't a working photographer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He took the pictures because he had a love of photography and a Leica M3, the best camera you could have at the time, and just took it with him and took pictures because he had this access that no one else in the world did. But because he wasn't a working photographer, he didn't leave any notes. So a couple of the contact sheets have like notes scribbled on the back of it. There's one from like RCA Studios in Los Angeles on the back of it. It says, "Get off my cloud." So I knew that. But most of this was months and even years of trying to figure things out. In fact, there's two photos that are up at that are up at Blues Heaven Foundation, where Ian Stewart is at a keyboard, and there's a beautiful long-haired blonde woman sitting on the bench next to him, and I still haven't been able to figure out who she is.
So if you're listening tonight, beautiful long-haired woman.
That's right, absolutely.
Get a hold of it. Well, thank you so much. I can't recommend this highly enough. It's the Rolling Stones at Chess in Chicago. It's at the Blues Heaven Foundation in association with the Bob Bonus Museum, Miami, Gallery Schuster, Berlin. And and that's at 2120, of course, South Michigan. Give me the website again. How people
Bob Bonus Chess, BobBonusChess.com.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
Dave,
it was
really
good to see you the other day. And safe travels.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. We'll be back with some live music. And we got a treat for you in the Allstate Skyline studio. It may be the loudest band we've had in the studio. Ben, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to tune you up a little bit. Ben Russell, you've been on the show before. We talked about the band. The band is called Ethel Shank.
Yes, sir.
Talk about the band name before I want people to know what we're talking about.
So we actually talked about if we were going to get asked this question, what our answer was going to be, and we never came with a consensus.
There's no reason this band is named this.
It just is Ethel Shank. We are Ethel Shank. That's all. It's always
there's
been.
Nobody you knew out in the western suburbs named
not
Ethel
a Shank? Single person. I don't know any Ethels. Not one.
We're gonna make up a crazy story about it, but we wanted to be honest with the people.
And we also didn't come up with the story.
Ben, you've been on the show before, so thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Very brave of you to come back to do the show again. So introduce everybody in the band and then tell us what the first song is going to be.
Absolutely. So on keyboards and aux percussion, we have...
My name is Trevor Smith.
Okay.
On the bass, we've got...
Sean Swanson.
On lead guitar, backing vocals...
Dominic LaCalamita.
And on drums, we've got...
Ryan Gowdy on drums. Gowdy. And what's the first song you're going to do?
First song we're going to do is a song called Down South. It was off our last EP called Rumble Young Man Rumble. It came out like last summer. Yeah.
And before you start, I mean, you guys are no small. We're very honored to have you. You got a little tour coming up. You're going to be in Milwaukee on the 21st, the Cubby Bear on June 29th.
Yes.
I want to talk about Iowa City. I love Iowa City. Gabe's on June 23rd.
Yes, our boy Trev is from Iowa City.
I want to talk to him about George's Buffet in a little bit. But so we're really lucky to have you guys. So let's hear this song.
All right.
Okay.
Starting over my life.
That is Ethel Schenk on WGN out of the Allstate Skyline Studio. So talk about how did the band get together, and then I want to get into all your musical backgrounds, what you're doing now. But
well, it started a while back. About I think we played our first show October of 2017.
That's Ben talking there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was started as kind of a project where I was just recording some stuff. And I have played with Dominic and Ryan for so many years. I knew I wanted them in on this. So they...
Yeah, I mean, me and Ben have been friends since sixth grade. We were always throwing together little musical projects and stuff. And Ryan didn't come shortly after. And so it was pretty natural and expected that we were going to be doing this.
Yeah,
so that was cool.
Dominic and I have been, you know, also jamming together a long time, and then when I came in on this project, it all just kind of meshed together really well. And,
okay.
Yeah.
And you know, Trevor and Sean were in a band together for a while, and so after a couple lineup switches, it was just like, well, we need a bassist, and I'd really love to get some keys on this. And
that's what always happens.
Yeah,
that's
how it goes. It's worked out really well.
Okay, we got to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk some more and hear some more music. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. So we're back with Ethel Schenk. How you guys doing over there?
Fantastic. This is great.
You're having fun?
Yeah.
I want to talk about what you're doing at school, but before we do that, talk about where people can see you. I touched on some of these dates, but talk about some of your upcoming appearances.
All right, so we are going on a North American tour. We're hitting 14 cities: Detroit, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Iowa City, Cleveland, Indianapolis, Nashville, Louisville, Chicago, Pittsburgh, New York, Ottawa, Toronto, and then London, Ontario.
And how are you getting around? You got a van?
In a minivan.
Minivan? Who's driving? Who's the driver?
We're taking turns.
You take turns.
It's brutal.
And you've opened for Local H?
Hey.
Or not?
So
we didn't. No.
Well, Ben, you told me that. Ben,
when did I tell you that?
Yeah, through an email.
Was that way back?
Yeah,
there was supposed to be.
Okay.
We shouldn't talk about.
What about White Mystery?
That we did do.
What was that like?
That was awesome. That was at the Cubby Bear. It sold really well. That was a good show.
Yeah, and we had a Chicago local Touched by Ghoul on that show too.
Yeah, they opened up for Foo Fighters.
They did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I mean, do you commiserate with you? I mean, I know the folks in White Mystery, do you learn stuff? Do they talk to you about stuff? Do you network with them?
We would have loved to, but at Cubby Bear, it's 21 and up, and none of us are over 21, so we're only allowed in the venue when we're playing.
We load in, we
play, isn't that
and
something?
They kick us out.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a really cool experience to play, but there's not a lot of network that happens.
What else is a really cool experience is spending 3.5 hours at McDonald's before the show.
Okay, you're going to play your new single here. Talk about that.
So we did kind of a reimagination of 2011's Sweater Weather by The Neighborhood, kind of made it our own, and it dropped just yesterday. So check it out, just on all platforms.
Yeah, how do you find it?
Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Deezer, Tidal, whatever you listen to.
YouTube, I'm sure.
YouTube.
YouTube.
Yeah, that's probably a good one I should mention.
Can I introduce this?
Absolutely.
I can feel like it, because I just love the name of the band. So here's Ethel Schenk with Sweater Weather.
With my toes in the sand, seas of my sweater, diving adventure, head in the clouds, but my gravity is center. Touch my neck and I'll touch yours. You in those little high-waisted shorts. Oh, she knows what I think about, what I think about. One love, two mouths. One love. No shirt, no blouse, just us, find out. Nothing that I wouldn't want to tell you about. It's too cold world for you here. my sweater. But maybe just take your breath away. I don't mind if there's not much to say. Sometimes the silence guides our minds and move to a place so far away. The goosebumps start to raise the minute my left hand meets your waist. And then I watch your face, put my finger on your tongue, give you love today. It's hard to door, everyone on the beach hard is for. Inside this place is warm, outside it starts to pour. Come down, one love, two mouths, one love, one house. No shirt, no blouse, just us, find out. Nothing I don't want to tell you about. Cause it's too cold, for you here and now to get me home. Both your hands in the hole, cause it's too cold, for you here and now to get me home. Both your hands in the holes of my sweater.
Single there by Ethel Shank, and it's Sweater Weather. You know, I asked you, so that's written, recorded, produced, and distributed by you guys. It's all DIY.
Yeah, I mean, written originally by the neighborhood, yeah, but right. We redid it. It's hard to brand something like that.
Yeah.
Dominic did a lot of it if he wants to say anything on it.
Yeah, I mean, I just threw together an arrangement of it, the original songs in a different time signature, and we just kind of wanted to mess with it, give it a little bit of a swing. Yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm going with that is like a DIY. I mean, you're doing, again, when you talk to your peer groups and stuff, is this the way people are getting music out now? I mean, you're totally on board. I mean, you book your own shows. I mean, how much work do you put into this?
All of it.
Yeah, right.
Work. I mean, we email every single venue, every single band that plays with us. We record all our own music. We produce all our own music.
And it's actually interesting, our recording process, because most of us are all at different colleges.
Right.
So it was a lot of, like, Dominic sending the guitar tracks. It's like, okay, now I got to send the piano tracks. And it's kind of, it is a lot of work, but it's the only way we know how to do it.
So talk about, how many of you go to Belmont and Nashville?
Just Sean, man.
Just Sean?
Yeah, it's just me now.
And you're studying audio engineering?
Yes, that's right.
I've got to turn you up on this.
I was just a little far from the
mic. I want to talk to you about that, Sean. You're in Belmont and Nashville. That's a great music school, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it down there. Nashville's a great city.
Yeah, my brother lives in Nashville. What are some of the things you learned there that you're able to bring to the band back here in Chicago?
It really helped out. We recorded that Sweater Weather cover in Ben's basement, and it was just really nice to know stuff for like mic placement and like good ways to get different sounds out of like what little gear we had to use down there. So
you're all involved in the music industry. You're learning about the music industry in school, right?
Yeah.
Everybody.
All somewhat music majors.
We have like three music majors, two audio engineering. Ben's kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And Ben, are you back on the mic here?
Yeah.
So are you studying? What are you studying at DePaul?
I'm studying sound technology, but the difference between Belmont and DePaul is that at DePaul, it's in the music school. So I also take like music theory classes and all that, whereas at Belmont, it's actually in the music business school.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Mike Kerb was I think Mike Kerb's a big donor there down
it's
there.
It's the Mike Kerb College of Business.
Like
half of the buildings down there or something are named after him. It's kind of crazy.
I know Belmont's got great. Don't they have a pretty good basketball team too?
They do. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. You got a couple more songs for us?
Yeah.
And I've got some more questions for you. So don't go. I really appreciate you bringing all the gear in. After the break, we'll reintroduce everybody. But man, that's really impressive.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to be back after this with more Ethel Schenk on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN, and we're privileged to have Ethel Schenk in the studio. The band, not the woman there. All State Skyline Studio. How you guys doing?
Fantastic.
You having fun?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Ben Russell. Ben, introduce the band for everybody.
All right.
And talk about all that. I mean, again, I keep talking about this gear, but people can watch online, but talk about what all you're playing.
So Trevor's got...
I've got a Williams Legato full-size keyboard.
Very detailed. Just tell
us. Snare, floor tom, and crash cymbal as well.
So keyboard and aux percussion. Sean on the bass.
Yeah, Sean Swanson. Yeah,
I just got Sean the bass Swanson. In the end.
Yeah, that's okay.
Nice and simple, not too much to carry.
Okay,
I've got my guitar, pedal board, amp brought up here.
Okay,
and got this awesome kind of newish Ludwig drum set. Back
that's there. Ryan, right? Ryan Gotti.
Yeah.
How you doing, Ryan?
I'm good.
Okay,
and I'm Dominic, and I have guitar, pedal board, amp, and lots of cables.
So thank you for bringing all that in.
Absolutely. Here, parked in a parking garage, which is really dumb so far.
There's a lot going on downtown tonight. So,
yeah, Blues Fest.
Blues Fest, right. So talk about the song. Why don't you set up the song, talk what it's about.
All right. So this one is also off of our last EP. It's called Life Was Better. This whole EP is a story of me and another person. And I'll just let the song speak for itself.
Okay, I might have questions after that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Life was better. Abuse of woman in my bed. Something's calling. Those voices in my head. That felt better. Now it's on these men. Life was better. Abusive woman in my bed. Girls on my back. What's not my bed? My bed.
off my back. Wasn't on my feet, heart ain't bad. Here is my brain, through to my cheeks. It's all sky, standing in the rain.
Rocking the airwaves, that's Ethel Schenck. That may be my favorite song you've done tonight.
Appreciate it.
You know, Adam Phillips, they had a little Steppenwolf chucka 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 thing. It was good. Now, I want to kind of deconstruct that. So, Ben, are you there?
Yeah.
So, talk about how that song come together. I mean, did you write it from a riff? And then, since we talked a little about the dynamics of the band, how does the rest of the band... So let's deconstruct that one song. How did it start? How'd you write it? How'd you share it with the band? Talk it from the beginning to the end.
Almost all of the songs that we do start with riffs, yeah. I guess. But, you know, a lot of the songs kind of have like a one main songwriter. So Trevor's been working on this new one called Heavy We're Gonna Do. Dominic kind of took the helm on Sweater Weather. I did a lot of Life Was Better. So I came up with that riff and then, you know, felt the melody, kind of just fit the lyrics in there, and then just built everything kind of around that with everyone else's input and just figuring things out, yeah. You know?
It's real fun because, you know, whoever's working on a tune, like Ben will bring in a song, this one for example, and he'll kind of give us the skeleton and we all get to kind of add a bit of our own flavor. It's real cool working with everybody.
In the other segment, how much of the recording do you do live, and how much of it do you send stuff to each other, and what are the benefits and drawbacks of each of those processes?
Well, the last EP we actually recorded at a studio called Sound Summit. So that was, you know, everybody kind of coming in and recording their bit and whatever, and, you know, that was everything was mixed there. But then Sweater Weather is the first thing we've actually done where we just decided, you know what, we've got producers, we've got mics, we've got the setup, let's just do this ourselves. And then, so that's really been our first experience with figuring out what's going to be shipped off and sent around and all that stuff.
And talk about upcoming gigs where people can see you, and also throw out the website where people can find your product.
Absolutely. So closest gigs around the area, June 21st in Milwaukee, we're playing Schenck Hall, which is very fitting. We're playing Iowa City, like you mentioned, June 23rd. We are also playing in Chicago June 29th at Cubby Bear. More details to come on that very soon. Yeah.
So this is like your first big outing as a band. A tour, for sure, right?
We did a small tour last summer.
Last summer.
Like about 4 days.
4 or 5 days.
Yeah. Trevor?
Yes.
You're from University of Iowa?
I am, yep.
Have you been to George's Buffet?
I actually have not yet.
Yeah. Great burgers. Sure. The Iowa Writers Workshop, like Kurt Vonnegut and stuff, used to hang out there and stuff.
Oh, nice.
It's like been there since the 30s. So
really,
how old are you, Trevor?
I'm 20.
So you can't, yeah, so.
Yeah, none of us can, yeah.
Trevor, I'll sell you a fake ID, and you and I can go there.
Sounds like a deal.
Okay. All right. Now, you guys are all, we all went to the same high school at different times.
Yes.
Naperville Central.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not really why, I mean, I just met you, Ben, when you came on the show to talk about some political stuff there. But I was telling you during the news break, back when I was at Naperville Central, and I don't know if this is, I want to ask you guys if this is still true. There was really a definitive sound. I mean, there's a South Side sound. Maybe it would be Styx. You know, there was a sound out of Berwyn that would be Survivor or Ides of March. You know, we talked, Adam talked about Cheap Trick being out of Rockford, the Shoes about being out of Zion. Does that still exist today? Is there still a regionalism to suburban Chicago music?
You know, this is Ryan here.
Yeah.
Hi, Ryan.
Yeah. I think today, I feel like a lot of the suburban kids are kind of hopping on, like, the city of Chicago bandwagon. And I mean, I think that's a good thing. You know, you got Twin Peaks, Post Animal, and Grape Tooth, and that kind of gang, you know, hanging around on the north side. And, I mean, from my experience, that's kind of what's hot right now.
Yeah, I mean, the sound is interesting because it's there's not many bands playing out. Like, there's not a lot of new big bands out inspiring the little bands. You know, you get a lot of, like, pop punk and stuff, like, coming off the Green Day wave still, but, you know.
I mean, even 3 or 4 years ago, I noticed there was a lot more bands out in the suburbs than there is now.
They're having trouble putting together local shows in the area even now. Yeah, just out of bands.
Nobody really comes out to these sort of functions anymore. It's hard to amass a crowd.
Well, and even trying to make this group, we had a lot of difficulty finding a bassist. Oh, yeah. Because Sean is originally a guitar player.
Yeah,
like last summer, Ben just kind of hit me up. He was like, hey, man, you want to go on tour for 4 days? And I was like, sure. And he was like, great, learn bass. Yeah.
Here I am. And now he owns a bass. It's crazy.
Well, that's interesting. We've asked other bands that on the show. I mean, what is the process of trying to get gigs? And I mean, I know in LA it's pay to play. I mean, that's another thing about, yeah, and I'll let you go. But that's another thing is like, you know, you got to do product. That's how you sustain yourself. It's like, even the big bands do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, at this stage in the game for us, we're kind of like our own, you know, marketing team. It's a lot of the work we do is, you know, it's more administrative work than it is even making music. So it's like, you know, you send 30 emails out and hope to get, you know, one back, and you know, eventually someone will bite, and that's how we get gigs.
Yeah, and our process really boils down to ask and see if they say yes, and we've been lucky enough to have a lot of people saying yes recently.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really play shows in the suburbs anymore either. Like, it's so much easier to get people to come out if you've got city shows with city bands. You know, we've been doing a lot more of that than playing out in Naperville or wherever.
What about festivals? Do you do festivals?
We have done a festival.
I'd love to if anyone offers.
Yeah. Feel free. Yeah.
If you are a festival organizer listening to this program, our number is...
You don't do Ribfest.
We did Ribfest one time.
Did you? Really? Yeah, they're leaving Naperville, right? They're going to
Aurora.
Romeoville or Aurora?
This is news
Aurora,
to me.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a bummer. Oh yeah, they're putting in a softball field where Ribfest goes. It's a good thing. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Well, Billy Idol's at Ribfest this year.
Yeah, we'll be on tour.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take
Canada.
A break. You got one more song, right?
Absolutely.
I'm going to come in and say hi to you, make sure you're doing okay, and then we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more F.L. Shank on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. You guys okay there?
Absolutely.
F.L. Shank. So introduce the band one more time, just the names of everybody there, Ben.
I am Ben.
Trevor.
Dominic.
Ryan.
Sean.
Ryan and Sean, if you didn't hear those last two.
And give us the website, how people can find Ethel Shank material.
Easiest way is Facebook, search Ethel Shank. Instagram, search Ethel Shank. We do updates all the time on there.
We should have a website coming up pretty soon where you could buy tickets to our shows that are also coming up soon.
And how much? You got an EP? Is there any other stuff you got that people...
We have an EP that came out last summer, and we have a single that dropped yesterday.
And you've only been you've been prolific then. You've a year and a half you've been together?
We started playing together late 2017. So yeah, about a year and a half that this group's been jamming.
We should be having more singles coming out soon too, so stay up to date with us.
Yes.
I just think it's a compelling story cuz you guys are still young, and but I just like the fact you've got all this music background that you're putting into this, you know? I mean, are you all involved in music at school?
Oh yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah. We're somewhere or another, we're all involved.
Yeah.
Dominic, are you a performance major?
Yeah, I'm actually switching majors. I came in to Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin this year, doing a double degree program, music and psychology. But this next year, I'll be switching to a new program. It's called the BMA program, and it's a mix of, you know, music performance and audio production and marketing yourself as a musician. So I'm excited for that too. That's fun.
And Ben, what all do you do at DePaul? I think we got off that before. But
it's sound technology, but it's in the music school, the School of Music. So I get to kind of go in with my instrument and take lessons and do classes in theory and all that stuff. But it's also mainly like an audio engineering major.
It's fascinating. Okay, well, why don't you set up this song? I want to thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can stretch it a little bit. So set up the song. I want to thank... Adam Phillips for the engineering and Roe Coleman for the production. And you played this before on the show, right?
Yeah, when I was on here last time, I did it acoustically. It was on an EP that we dropped like before we even started playing shows together, but we took it off. We felt it wasn't our best work, but we're kind of reworking some of the songs. So this is a version that actually hasn't been played live before. We've been working on it.
And what's it called?
Sinatra.
And what's it? Talk just a little. You got about a minute here for the backstory. Talk a little bit about
it. All right,
it.
So it was kind of just one of those angsty songs where it was kind of like, it was before I left for college. I was like, I got to get out of here. So it's about not feeling like you're where you're supposed to be.
Okay. So thank you for listening. Thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks to everyone. Thanks to all these guys back here in the band. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much. Okay. This is Sinatra from Ethel Shank. Well, maybe I've been wrong. Not in New York. Different drinks. Frank Sinatra. Maybe dancing. But not away. Marilyn Monroe. She goes off D.C. to John Kennedy. A little cabin dog. A cigarette for James Dean, the prom queen, a rebel without a cause. Maybe I could ride with the dead, singing Viva with Jerry Garcia. Maybe I'm a dog in London, tripping through the sky with John Lennon. I know. Thank you.
That's Ethel Shank. We got it. We got about another minute or two to kill. So,
all right.
So what? what was it like to take that from acoustics to what you just heard?
So actually, the acoustic came from that. We started with that, and then I had to try to make it acoustic, and it was very boring to me. But I really like this new version we've been working on. Everyone kind of came with some new ideas, and we just revamped it.
Just add a lot more layers to that one.
Are you writing new stuff now?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. We're actually be premiering a lot of it on tour. Not a lot, but a couple songs.
We're hoping to drop a single during tour that Trevor's been working really hard on.
Do you, what about, like, you know, we talked about getting music out and touring, but what about, like, radio airplay or even, like, something like WONC in Naperville? Do they have, like, a local thing?
Sometimes, like, college stations around the country have had a couple that have played us.
Yeah, we've gotten notifications. Down South seems to be played on a couple college radio stations. We got one, I think the weirdest one was, like, Rutgers. Yeah. Emailed us that Down South got played. But we've done, you know, we've demo 312 on WKQX and stuff. But other than that, it's kind of hard to figure out what radio stations, you know, you got to go through and what are the best ones to, you know, try to get your stuff played on.
I think the obvious answer is that WGN is the best.
Well, yeah. We're breaking new ground here. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's getting hit. And people can, you know, listen to you on the podcast of the show that'll be out soon and stuff. What about, you know, this will be the last question, musical influences and stuff. I mean, where do you hear the music? Do you hear stuff you like on radio? Where do you get your ideas from?
You know, I find a lot of inspiration from kind of like a newer, a little more underground rock scene that seems to be kind of taken from a lot of like the grunge stuff of the 90s, bands like Highly Suspect and Cleopatra, and a band that we actually have the privilege of playing with in Toronto, Ready the Prince, that's actually been kind of a huge inspiration to us. Yeah, I don't know about the other guys.
We also have like a pretty wide range. Like on the car ride up, we're listening to people like Thundercat and JID the rapper, so...
Kamasi Washington.
Yeah, so we're kind of all over the place and like to take a little bit from each different genre, each different artist.
And is it all online? Where do you find the songs?
Mostly streaming.
Yeah, right.
It's just the easiest way to do it now. It's kind of the only way.
Do you go to like when you're on tour or you're wandering around, do you go to old record stores and check out stuff? Is vinyl back for you?
Yeah. Well, I think we all have record players.
I don't.
Yeah, not John. Okay, I lied.
Ben has a record player.
You have a record player? Shut up.
I have one.
I don't have my dorm. At home, yeah.
It's a great little, you know, there's not a bad, it's not a bad little record store over there, but I don't know if you've been over there. I don't know, I can't remember the name of it, but by the train station in Naperville. You can get vinyl.
Oh, Purple Dog.
Purple Dog, yeah.
I love Purple Dog, yeah.
It's like I'm going back to my youth. I walk in there and there's incense. They have incense going, but you can get like vinyl in pretty good shape for like $5 in there.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's a good place. Well, I wish you guys all the luck in the world. It's really great to see a band and hear a band in kind of an embryonic stage, and you got a lot of stuff ahead of you. So it's going to be, we should check in down the road.
I would love to do that. Thank you.
Okay, shout out everybody one more time, and I'll say goodbye again.
I'm Ben.
I'm Trevor.
I'm Dominic.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shaw.
And we are Ethel Shank.
Love you guys. Thanks a lot for coming in. And thanks again, Roel Coleman. And thanks for the engineering, Adam Phillips. And we'll see you next week on WGN's Nocturnal Journal.